Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
We sort of talked about is how many points did Erigaisi lose at Tata Steel?
Well, I guess it's like 70 plus. And in these like time scramble messes, if it actually gets there, usually the person who has to win somehow wins. Like still, I find Alireza's play in 1 minute very impressive. It's one of those kind of unobtainable things because, of course, in like normal chess, I feel like I can obtain any level. But in 1-0, I just feel like I'm watching someone who can do something that I can't dream of doing.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to C Squared. I'm here with my good friend and one of the best chess players on the planet, Fabiano Caruana. Fabi, how are you doing? Where you are in the world?
Good, thanks. I'm in Germany. There's the first freestyle world championship. We spoke about it before. Mm-hmm. That's coming up soon, a few days. So I'm here a little bit early, but not too early. I think most players will arrive within the next day or so. And then we'll start playing on the 13th. And it's only a 3-day event. It's the shortest one we've had of this freestyle series that we've been playing for the last year. And this is sort of a continuation of that in some ways, but also a new season and the first kind of standalone championship. So that's interesting. I'm looking forward to playing. And I also did play 2 games in the Bundesliga, German league.
Yep.
Which I hadn't played classical chess since the US Championship. So, I played a bunch of tournaments. Like, I played the World Rapid Blitz. I played the Global Chess League in Mumbai. I played the Clutch Chess thing in St. Louis. But I didn't play any classical chess since the US Championships.
Everything is rapid and blitz nowadays, yeah?
Yeah, it was a lot of rapid and blitz back-to-back. Even the Grand Chess Tour, it was mostly rapid and blitz that I played.
Difficult to find the classical events nowadays. But yeah, we got a lot to cover today. Lots of topics, a couple of tournaments that just finished at the Steel. We did cover a little bit of it towards the end, but we do have to sort of highlight what happened in both groups, because I think quite exciting stories came from both of them. And of course, the Speed Chess Championship, that's another one that just finalized. I think it was yesterday or a couple of days. I think it was yesterday. And then, of course, there's a scheduling conflict that just came out, and we should definitely talk about that and kind of give you your story behind that. And I guess the angle of a top chess player, because this letter was signed by a bunch of top chess players, and we'll be covering that in just a second as well. And of course, perhaps you want to talk about the Bundesliga games and kind of the idea behind that also. But let's start chronologically with Tata Steel. Tata Steel, Nordirbek, did it. He did it after 3 years of sort of struggling to finish the job. He was always very close to winning it. One of them, a couple of years back, he was half a point ahead in the lead going into the final round. I think he lost that and allowed, I don't remember exactly who, to win that event, but that was, I think it was Anish, sort of heartbreaking. And then I think he lost the tie breaks the previous year in 2025. And then finally he does it, and he does it in convincing fashion. In fact, winning the last round and clinching the title. Impressed with Nordirbek's story in this year's event. And you could see it in the interview as well. He was very happy. And in fact, it meant a lot to him to finally win this one. So definitely showed improved mental resilience, I would say. How do you see his victory?
Yeah, I'm not surprised that he was very happy. To start with, it's when you've been close and then you finally do it, it feels good. It was also a very good tournament, and especially after he had a rough period in like the third quarter of last year, around the time of the Singfield Cup and then the World Cup. He had two very poor performances in the Singfield Cup. He lost a lot of rating, and then he made a comeback. So he, since then, he won the London Classic. We didn't really ever talk about that tournament, but it was quite a strong tournament that he won with something like 8 out of 9, or I don't know, 7.5 out of 9. I think one of those scores, like very high score. And Alireza was second place, but it wasn't really a close fight for first. So he had a great tournament there. Then he did quite well in the World Blitz Championship. And then he got the silver medal. And then he won this tournament with a big score, +5.
Huge score.
Even Sindarov had a great tournament too, but it wasn't enough to win, +4. Also very good score. +4 is actually usually enough, usually makes it. Okay, yep. Usually makes it to a playoff. So it's not, you know, there have been many players who have made +4 in the last few years and then had a playoff, like Gukesh, I think twice made +4 and then lost a playoff against Weiyi 1 year, Prague last year. So it doesn't always guarantee anything, but still you can expect that +4 might make the playoffs. So Sindarov had a good tournament, but +5 is excellent. With one loss,
absolutely.
So he won 6 games. Noderbeck, that is. Sindarov was actually undefeated. Mm-hmm. 4 wins, 9 draws. Very, very good performance. He gained a bunch of rating, put himself close to the top 10, I think. I don't know the exact live ratings, but I think Sindarov is now close to top 10.
I'm looking at them right now. He's about 3 rating points away from Gukesh, who is number 10 right now after Tata. Still, he had a pretty poor performance. But yeah, he's only 20. We didn't really know whether he's going to establish himself as an elite top player. But in the last, let's say, year, I think he's made that quite clear. Sindarov is here to stay. And obviously, you know, the Canada's qualification, this event cements that rhetoric. But yeah, he's doing quite well. He's obviously a very, very powerful player. Abdusatorov, number 5 right now. Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, this Tata Steel tournament always does shake the rankings up quite a bit.
We should talk about the Indians, because the Indians had a rough event. Pretty much all of them. Prague, -16. Eric Aissi, -28. That's kind of insane.
Oh, I didn't see you there. You might be wondering, what am I doing here? Well, I'm getting my reps in.
You know, one of the most common questions I get is, how do you actually learn a new opening? Honestly, the best way, hands down, is by using chessreps.com. They've got these super fun, interactive opening courses that actually work. This isn't one of those chess courses you watch once and forget. These are fully interactive courses. You're not passively listening. You're actively playing the moves, getting quizzed on variations, and building that crucial muscle memory. It feels more like a game than studying. Hundreds of thousands of players have already used chessreps.com to break through plateaus and hit their highest ever ELO. And here's the cool part. They actually want you to see how powerful this is for yourself. Right now, you can take their entire Vienna Gambit and Stafford Gambit courses completely free. You don't even have to sign up. Just head over to chessreps.com and start learning. Right now, they have 25 courses for you, and they release a new one every single week. Seriously, this is the best way to learn openings. Go try it out at chessreps.com.
We sort of talked about this offline. How many points did Eric Aissi lose at Tata Steel?
Well, I guess it's like 70 plus. Well, we're not in this one tournament, but throughout the years.
Throughout the years,
he actually had, when he first won the B group, he had a very good tournament. I think he completely dominated and scored like, okay, people will have to go back and check, 10 out of 13, 10 and a half out of 13, something along those lines. That was in 2000, I believe 20... 2, I believe. And then he, whenever he played the A group, he didn't have a very good performance. Yeah, I mean, that's putting him out. He had quite a few bad performances. So it's not really been his tournament to put it mildly. I can relate because I've also had some of my worst tournaments in Baikanzai. 2018, right before winning the candidates, I had a -3 score. Was blundering many games, was like blunders from the opening, very, very poor play and kind of like oblivious tactically throughout the tournament. Last year I had also something, I forget what it was, but -3 maybe again. I mean, something very regrettable. So I've had a few bad ones. I also had like my best, one of my best ever in 2020, +7.
Yep.
Winning the tournament with two points over second place. But that was an outlier. It's usually been a place where I've struggled.
What do you think is it about the event and specifically Riga? Is it perhaps his style of play as well that sort of, I don't know, puts him in this position where he just doesn't seem to recover after he starts poorly? He did recover, I believe it was a couple of years ago when he won the last two.
Last year.
But still it wasn't enough to not lose a lot of rating. It was sort of, he was playing the spoilers role. But he's just losing a lot of rating. And is it time for him to stop accepting Tata Steel invitations?
No, ironically, I do know that he won't stop. And that he shouldn't. Why should he? If I mean, just because you have a bad tournament 1 year doesn't mean you always will. Or 3 years.
Yeah. But it's been 3 years. Yeah, yes, that's the problem.
I think it's more like you kind of have to like the place because it's a very special place. For people who don't know it, it's a town close to Amsterdam. You know, like half an hour by car. But in the winter, there's not a whole lot to do.
It's a bit depressing. I'm not going to lie. It's a bit depressing, especially if you get the rainy days, which is 90% of the time.
Yeah, it's a beach town, and people go there for vacation in the summer. But in the winter, there is not much use for the beach. I mean, it's very windy and very cold. And it's a small place, so you spend 3 weeks there. You know, you can get a bit of cabin fever after a while, mm-hmm. which I've had some experience with. Like you can actually just, if you don't manage your emotions, you can start to feel like you're trapped.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's also a special tournament in the sense that it's been going on for like 85 years. Something along those lines, you know.
It's a classic. Yeah,
yeah, it's the longest running super tournament. The one time that I won, I actually thought, oh, this is a great place. I'm having a great time. But when I do badly, I just feel like I want nothing more than to get out of here at any cost. So yeah, it's, you kind of have to like the place, and it's also, I can imagine, so different from India. I mean, in the climate, in everything, you know,
food,
probably especially, you know, it's cold and
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner. So you can give everything you've got, whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And windy. And dark. And very dark. So I don't know. I mean, I'm just speculating, but it's... for chess players, a very familiar place. Most chess players I know have been there at least once. Some, like Magnus or Vichy, have been there like 15 plus times. And if you calculate the amount of time you spend there as a top player, you realize it quickly comes out to like a year plus in actual days, which is just remarkable. I mean, what other tournament can you say that you spent an entire year sitting there playing chess?
Yeah. Yeah. We did the math the year that we went together, Tata Steel, and it was a lot. It was a lot. Cool. All right. So these are sort of, you know, the outliers on both sides of the spectrum, kind of in the middle, or perhaps, you know, on the positive run as well is Hans. And I would add Jordan Van Forest on that one as well. Jordan, I think he won quite a few rating points. He's right now climbing quite above 2,700. He's been a little bit above, a little bit below, but he never made that push. It does seem like Tata Steel is his tournament. He won it once. He's doing quite well in this one, plus 14 rating points. Hans, first time, first invite, wins 10 rating points. I would say that's a successful event for him as well. Let's go to the B group, because I think there's some storylines from the B group as well, specifically the winner, Woodward. Great talent from the United States. He's been climbing. He's been very successful this past year, 2025. Won the juniors, played in the U.S. Championship, and he did quite well in the U.S. Championship as well. He seems to be a very stable, consistently stable player. He's increasing consistently his rating, and he just seems to be getting better and better. And despite losing the first round, he showed tenacity and in fact came back and convincingly won the event after that. Impressed with Woodward. Carissa also played a very good event. Now we're sort of focusing on the Americans, but how do you see the stories coming and the players coming from the B group?
Yeah, the B group was mostly Andy. I mean, like Chuki had a good event, Suleimani had a good event, but yeah, at the end it was mostly Andy who took it all, and he mm-hmm. deserved it. So that I think not a surprise as well. If you looked at his chess the last few years, not a surprise that he's doing well. To win it on first try is pretty impressive, because there's like this maybe adjustment period, right? But to win on your first try,
yeah,
is very good. And he'll play the A group next year, so that'll be his not his first test at the top level, but playing like a pure super tournament, you could say. One of his first, because the U.S. Championship, it's like, yeah, it's a super tournament, but it's a mixed, somewhat mixed, right? Mm-hmm. And okay, he did well there. He played well against the top guys. I mean, he drew me. He drew LaFon. Am I getting that right?
Mm,
oh, wait, did he lose?
I think so.
Wesley. He didn't know the opening too well, but in general, I mean, he also could have beaten me. It was like he had a huge advantage. So it was a successful U.S. Championship for him. Here he, he was just the best player in the tournament, no doubt.
Again, he's very consistent.
Yeah, that's, yeah. That's he also, like the Grand Swiss, we said he had this like theoretical chance to qualify for the candidates going to the last round.
Yep.
Maybe not the biggest chance, but still to even have that theoretical chance going into the last round is really good. And and he was very, very strong there. Also very solid. He wasn't like, you know, he wasn't losing many games or anything. Actually, I'll have to check if he lost any games in the Grand Swiss. It is possible that he just went undefeated.
He did. I'm checking it. Yeah, he lost against
Maxime,
NVL. Yeah.
Yeah, Maxime. Yeah, this,
yeah he lost against NVL, but still he did quite well in that one. Like he won a lot of games against very strong players. He beat Levon, he beat Maksudlu, drew Yu Yang Yi. I mean, he's been playing against 2700s. Like it's a normal thing with no
yeah, it seems to be
no worries.
It seems to be just normal for him that he can compete with the best players. Maybe not on like 100% equal terms, but still close enough that he's putting up a fight in every game. And not losing much at all.
No.
So
no.
I think, you know, we'll see him twice at 100. I don't know, maybe not this year, but not too long from now. You know, it won't be long that we'll be thinking of him as a 2700 plus player.
Looking at the juniors' ratings right now, it's him. He actually surpassed Mishra. Mishra has been sort of the leading junior coming from the US for quite a while, but right now he's been slowing down a little bit. Already 17, Andy 15, and in fact, looking at the list, it's only Erdogmus who is ahead of him. Erdogmus, obviously, 14 years of age, 2686 already, so very close to 2700. It seems like the race between these two players is starting to heat up, given their age. So, you know, this is definitely something to follow in the upcoming years. Cool. All right. So those are the juniors. And of course, Carissa, we do have to mention her as well. I do think that, you know, Bibi Sara had a great event, but Carissa also is sort of starting. Bibi Sara is somewhat established. I see Bibi Sara already as one of the very, very elite women top chess players. Carissa is just making her way and establishing herself at the top, it feels like. And she had a pretty decent event as well. Getting close to that GM title.
Yeah, I think she was half point away, right, from the norm, the GM norm.
Mm-hmm.
Which also carries with it an additional bonus that it's like $100,000 for any woman player who gets the title. I don't know if it's like a set year limit, like how many years in the future, but I think it's like five prizes for the next five women grandmasters in the U.S.
And it's like four.
Because Irina already got hers. And so there's like four players to reach a GM title. Carissa is obviously the front runner, clearly. And that prize comes with $100,000 bonus. It's pretty sweet. Bonus.
Pretty sweet. pretty sweet, yeah.
And that's the, I think, called the Jeannie Sinkfield Prize. I don't know.
Jeannie Cairns Sinkfield Prize, yes. Obviously named after the co-founder of the St. Louis Chess Club, Jeannie Sinkfield. But that's yeah, Carissa nice is getting close.
It's
nice.
When they announced the prize, I don't think I said it publicly, but I basically said that Carissa is going to make it at some point. It's mm-hmm. hard to imagine that she doesn't. So whether it's now or a bit later, yeah, I think she's going to be GM. You know, when you see her performances at the US Championship, for example, scoring sometimes huge plus, sometimes starting a bit slowly, but still then winning like six games in a row and winning the tournament, you know, she's very strong. So
yeah,
it was a great tournament for her. Maybe a small disappointment she didn't get the extra half point there, but okay, you know, it was still a very good tournament.
Look, she's making her way. She's number 14 in the world right now. 15 rating points from 2500, which is the GM threshold. She's gonna make it. Obviously, definitely on the upswing. Bibi Sara also on the upswing, right now entering the top 10. At number 9. So women's chess, it seems like it's going through a reframe type of situation where the young players are starting to catch up with, let's say, the more established generation. So exciting times in that regard as well. Speaking of women's chess, now on a quick parallel, did you get a chance to watch the Polgar Netflix special?
No, it's on my list. I was thinking of doing it last night, but I wasn't feeling too great the last few days, so I just slept.
Mine too. Yes,
so yeah,
I haven't watched it.
I do want to see.
Is Judith there in Weisenhaus?
Not currently. I mean, right now there's. I mean, I don't know who is going to be here for the commentary. Like Judith has done, I think, most freestyle events, so she might be here.
But she probably will be there.
Like she was in South Africa. She was in Weisenhaus last year, so I would guess so, but currently it's basically nobody's here yet until like
hopefully we can have her again on the podcast. I would really like to chat with her about the special. I think this is the first Netflix of a chess player, like
Magnus
special. Did he have a Netflix special?
Yeah, like 10 years ago.
Was that on Netflix? Ah, yes, yes, I think you're right. The Magnus one. Still, huge, huge, absolutely huge. So congratulations to Judith, and we're waiting for you on the podcast. Cool. All right, let's go to the next event. I think, again, Tata Steel, always a fun tournament to watch at the beginning of the year. And again, a lot of things that kind of set the tone of the year happen at Tata Steel. Speed Chess Championship. Fun event, always. You've played this format quite a few times. This was the top four semifinals, finals. We had Magnus, Hikaru, Alireza, and Lazovic. Lazovic was quite the Cinderella story, and we'll get to that in just a second. But the tournament started, the semifinal started with Lazovic versus Magnus. That was somewhat of a lopsided match. Magnus won it convincingly, I would say. And then the big match of the first day was, of course, the clash between the two Falcons, Hikaru and Alireza. These two players have some history. They've been meeting quite a few times in the Speed Chess Championship in this format, and it was quite a match. Hikaru was leading all the way until the last 5 minutes of the match in the bullet portion. In fact, he had 2 points advantage going into the last 5 minutes. Alireza needed more or less a miracle to make it, and he got back-to-back wins to push it to overtime. And in the overtime, he took over the match and won it. Your first reaction to that? Did you follow live the match as it was unfolding?
Not all of them. I did catch the end of Hikaru and Alireza. Yeah, of course, it was 2-game lead at some point. Like, it's clear Alireza has to win his last two games. Hikaru can win a piece in one move with Queen B3. Kind of shocking that, you know, that he ended up losing that game where he just needed a draw. He's winning, and a draw would completely clinch the match. And I think he was kind of probably celebrating internally already. But then, it turned into a mess. And in these like time scramble messes, if it actually gets there, usually the person who has to win somehow wins. I don't know why, but it just usually happens. And that's what happened. And then Alireza also, but there were some like shocking things. Like Alireza won a rook endgame 2 pawns down, just 2 pawns down.
Yes. That was insane.
Both amazing that Hikaru lost it. Also amazing that Alireza like fine.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner. So you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
These tactics like Rook F4 with 2 seconds, like basically flagging and still finds these tactics. Both things are simultaneously kind of remarkable. I mean, like one of the issues I have with this whole thing is that a lot of the games are decided with people flagging, which is not very fun. I mean, it's like, okay, an interesting game, and I understand time scrambles are random, and I expect to see blunders because nobody can play well with 1 second. You know, some players can play better than others. Alireza is one of them. But, you know, I just seen people flag. Like at some point, Hikaru played rook takes c3. So Alireza was up a rook. Just by some miracle, I don't think either player saw it, but Hikaru still had a stalemate trick that he would survive with. But after rook takes c3, Alireza just doesn't get his move off in time. And then the interesting thing in the game would have been, would Hikaru have found that stalemate trick when they're both down to like 2 seconds? But it's also just taken away because Alireza just can't move the mouse in time, which is not a chess thing at all. It's just a hand speed
mechanics. Game. It's mouse mechanics.
Yeah, but I mean, we shouldn't be playing video games, right? At least it's not very interesting. I'd like to watch people play video games, but this is not a video game. So the fact that Alireza can move his mouse in time and flags is not too interesting for me as a spectator.
But wouldn't you see this just as part of the nature of competition? Like, there's misses in pretty much every sport. Like, you have a simple, you know, layup in basketball, and then due to the fact that, let's say, there's so much tension on the line and so much stake on the line, you miss it, and then there's just part of the game.
That's part of the game. The same in chess. If someone blunders because they're nervous in a game, that's part of it. Like, that's part of what you need to do as a chess player, right? You need to avoid blunders. You need to stop getting nervous. And just in basketball, you need to be able to you know, make simple shots, right? Those are the foundations. You need to win winning positions in chess. You need to not blunder pieces. These things are not easy to always do, but these are the things that you need to do to win, let's say. But in basketball, you don't need to do things outside of basketball. Like, for example, if someone throws a shoe, it's not my job as a basketball player to be able to dodge someone throwing a shoe from the outside, right?
That's an interesting analogy.
Just like
it's not
really my job to be able to move a mouse really fast in chess. But online chess is somewhat different. That you have to move a mouse fast.
It is. I mean,
in
the
chess,
mouse
you could say
and,
you have
and
to
the
move
skills
the pieces
you have,
fast sometimes.
Yes.
But in chess, it's like people's hand speed doesn't, I mean, sometimes there's a difference, but rarely is that, I think, a factor. Sometimes you see people flag, but you don't really see people flag over the board as much as, like, online. I can think of, just off the top of my head, in this last tournament, Hikaru against Lazovic, the third-place match. Mm-hmm. At some point, Lazovic, like, sacks a piece. It was, like, something odd takes on f3. And then, basically, the position is a draw, but Hikaru just flags. And then there's this thing like slightly surprising moves. They can, even if they're not good, it actually wasn't a good move by Lazovic. They can work because they cause your opponent to run out of time, which doesn't feel like part of the game that I can. And then there was also like tactical issues, which I think, in the first match between Hikaru and Alireza early on, like Hikaru just flagged some totally drawn position. I think they turned that game into a draw because it's not Hikaru's fault that he flags. It's not his.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know. It's not his internet connection, or maybe it's not even his computer. I don't know about that. But certainly not his internet connection that he's responsible for. And then also Hikaru against Lazovic. I don't know why it only happened to Hikaru, but he also like at some point flags and they pause the match for 20 minutes. So, you know, you should probably get the computer side of things right if you want to host a computer championship, right? Because the guys are there in person. You can play on the board. I mean, they can actually just play Blitz on the board. But they, of course, it's chess.com. They want to have their chess.com. No, but we did that. We played on the board in 2023. We went to Toronto and we turned an online event into an over-the-board event. And I think it was good. I mean, I liked it.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, I'm a big fan of that. Over the board is my favorite as well. I don't play online chess a lot, but this is just the brand of chess.com. This is the brand of the Speed Chess Championship. It's mostly, you know, it's part of the competition. Like people want to see this type of flags, blunders, not internet connection issues. That was, I think, an issue that was from the site in London, not from chess.com, or at least that's what they said. It wasn't because of the computers, it was just because of the internet connection of the local site that they were playing at.
Okay,
so yeah, it did affect Hikaru and it was kind of unfortunate and it tainted, let's say, a little bit the result. But in the end, Hikaru he came fourth. He allowed Lazovic to mount a comeback, let's say, and actually win the match, which I would say it's probably the biggest surprise of the weekend. The fact that Lazovic managed to beat Hikaru, we did not expect that. I think Anish tweeted about it, said that you know, Lazovic is really good, is top of the top when it comes to speed chess and especially online chess. And he also said that him being 2600 in over the board chess is a bit of an anomaly. Why do you think that is? What do you think Lazovic's strength is after this weekend, after seeing him perform and actually beating Hikaru this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, of course, that he beat Hikaru is impressive. Hikaru is a very good blitz player, clearly. To be honest, I don't know exactly. I mean, it could just be that, you know, we have a small sample size. I mean, he can beat Hikaru. What are the chances? I mean, clearly it fell within those odds of him being able to.
But he's always at the top. Like in this online events, he's always at the top. I mean, he made it to the Speeches Championship and he was very close, I think, to making it even last year. So he's definitely showing a lot of consistency.
Yeah, he is strong. Over the board, he's also, like, in Blitz, he's good. Would I say he's, like, top 20 in the world in Blitz? No. I mean, that's definitely not, based on results. And in Rapid, no. Online, I mean, yeah, maybe there's a difference with... It's also time control is a bit different. I mean, I don't know. It's, again, this thing of, like, you know, how... Like, one of the most important parts of Blitz is how good of an eye can you keep on the clock?
Mm-hmm.
And it is actually visually different to have the clock in your peripheral on the board and to have it online, which is also in your peripheral, but it's a bit different. I mean, I don't know how much these things matter, but if you have a very good feeling of how much time you have, because you can't always be looking at your clock, then it helps you panic less. Like maybe these kinds of things differ a bit online over the board, and it doesn't make a difference to time scrambles. Because Lazovic, certainly he seems to be quite good in time scrambles.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's going to make quite an important difference in a lot of games, because a lot of these games come down to time scrambles. It could even be like the majority of the games come down to between strong players, of course. I mean, if it's Hikaru playing a 2300, then yeah, most games will not go down to a time scramble. But between Hikaru and, let's say, a 2650 player, let's just say that Lazovic is, I mean, I use classical rating, so of course it's all a bit different, and perhaps we shouldn't use classical ratings to describe these things. But let's say between two strong grandmasters, time scrambles will play an important part. And like what I heard was that Lazovic was actually the most accurate in time scrambles among the four players. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that can't be insignificant. There is for sure some difference between online and over the board in terms of visualization. I don't know how much of a difference this manifests. Like how different the chess scene is compared to the over the board chess scene. We do see some differences, but the online chess scene is also so random in some ways. And like, we don't have, you know, in the over the board chess scene, you kind of have these like events at the end of the year that decide everything, right?
Yeah.
The World Rapid Blitz, the World Rapid Blitz World Championships. And online, it's like some title Tuesdays, some 3-0. It's all like some have increments, some don't. All and most don't matter. And a lot of people just don't care. They play some 3-0 Thursday for $50. I mean, they don't really. It's different than playing the World Championship for $100,000. You know, and then Title Tuesday it matters more, but still, it's not the same as a World Championship. And then the Speeches Championship matters more, and so on and so forth. So you can't really compare, and that's why we don't have an accurate way of measuring how much of a difference it makes. Who's the best online? Who are the best 30 online versus the best 30 over the board. That's much harder to say until we have maybe some more data or maybe it gets a bit more standardized that we can actually, because then like this whole Esports World Cup also it goes from a few rapid events, a few blitz events like Tile Tuesday, and then it turns into a 10-0. Now it's like all without increment, right? But the Speeches mm-hmm. Championship also decides the Esports World Cup. It goes from increment to no increment. I mean, it's it is all a bit unstandardized in some way, this entire tour, you know. I think they could, it would make more sense if we have an esports World Cup that's 10 minutes 0.00 second increment, then all the qualifying events should be 10 minutes 0.00 second increment. That's at least you have like a clear picture of the tour in that case.
Yeah, that sort of became somewhat defining of that match between Lazovic and Hikaru, especially towards the end, where Hikaru sort of forgot that even if the time runs out, but the game has started, the game is still going to count. I think we could actually hear Hikaru say in the background while the final game was going on, and he had some real chances to win it. He was already telling to himself that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The game doesn't matter because the time ran out. So he was kind of down on himself, and it felt like he gave up. And then he asked the arbiter, would that game actually have counted? And the arbiter said, yes, of course, because, you know, the timer ended, the timer of the whole match ended after the start of the game. And he was kind of in a shock.
I just don't understand how it's possible he doesn't remember that. I mean, the guy is like, he uses the kind of running out the clock more than anyone.
I mean, he'll that's true.
Any rook endgame to 50 moves. No pawns rook versus rook. He'll play obstacle bishops to 50 moves. He's been playing for the last decade, more than decade, I think. I don't remember how long this thing has been going on, but at least a decade. He's been playing every single one. He's played like 4 matches a year for the last 10 years, and this format hasn't changed, and he doesn't remember the. I mean, okay, maybe strange things happen. You forget things in the heat of the moment, but.
I think it was just a confusion, or at least if we are to, you know, to say that what he says is true, which, you know, there's no reason not to. But if that's the case, then probably it was just confusion in the heat of the battle. But at the same time, yeah, it's those second decisions that you make. Sometimes you make them correctly. Sometimes you just completely black out and make the wrong decision. But yeah, exciting. And of course, the finals, Magnus beating Alireza 15-12. Bit of a better score for Alireza compared to last year. Last year was a complete trashing. I think it was 23-7 like seven or something like that. Something ridiculous. Much closer this time.
Yeah, it was
but
a close
it didn't
match.
Feel, yeah.
I mean, Alireza was winning the last game, and if he had won, he would need to win one game on demand. And it was like near the end of the timer, so he would have to win that one game on demand, and that's pretty close. I mean, it's about as close as you can get. But he didn't win that game. Would have been interesting to see the last game. So I was hoping that he would win that game and keep it super tight. But he didn't. It was okay. He had to, it was difficult. I mean, Magnus had seconds and Alireza had more time, but still he had to find a difficult move, and he didn't, and then Magnus kind of pounced. But it was overall a close and quite well-played match. Again, only issue I had with it was some random flaggings that take away from, I think, the fun of the games. But, okay.
Do you feel, you know, Alireza is sort of catching up to Magnus in speed chess in this format? I think it was Hikaru who said recently that he talked with Magnus, and they both agreed that Alireza, over a longer match in bullet, is probably the better player. So both Magnus and Hikaru believe that Alireza could be the better long format bullet player. Do you feel that's the case, and do you see Alireza catching up anytime soon with Magnus, who, you know, has been dominating this format? I think he won 3 in a row, 5 total. So obviously he's at the top still of this format.
Well, when people say bullet, I guess they mean 1-0, because that's, to me, say bullet, you mean 1-0. In that case, Alireza is definitely the best, I think, at this point. I mean, after he beat Hikaru a few years ago in that match, and then Hikaru didn't play the next year, and I don't care too much about 1-0 chess. It's kind of like half chess, half video game to me. But like, still, I find Alireza's play in 1 minute very impressive. it's one of those kind of unobtainable things, because of course in like normal chess I feel like I can obtain any level, but in 1-0 I just feel like I'm watching someone who can do something that I can't dream of doing. Like being able to stay calm when you have like 10 seconds in any position and you can get flagged like with no increment. I mean, just his belief in like his mouse skills, but also his belief that he can like win complicated positions with 10 seconds or, I mean, even when it's like some amazing stuff when he was playing this match, the Esports World Cup against Magnus. And it was in some ways both like just bad time management, but also shows his belief that he can win any position with like he's playing a complicated pawning game. Magnus has 3 minutes, Hallyrose has 16 seconds, no increment. Like what is going on? And then he draws the game. Or like when Magnus, it was like some just complicated middle game position, Magnus has 5 minutes, Hallyrose has like 25 seconds. And this is the game where like Magnus ends up blundering some stuff and Hallyrose had 2 queens. But just this like, it's just a different way of thinking for me. Like, I think, okay, if I have no increment, I can't get low on time because I'll get flagged any position. I mean, you know, I just can't move the mouse fast enough even. Not to mention can't think fast enough. So in like 1-0 chess, yeah, I think definitely Hallyrose is the best, but I don't know what that has to do with the speed chess championship because 1-0 and 1-1 are just two entirely different things. Like 1-0 and 1-1 is more different than 1-1 and 15-2, for example.
Of course.
It's that different. I mean, the 1 second increment is more different than playing a rapid game.
Yeah. No, 100%. And Alireza is good. Alireza is good. I feel we're not talking about him as much because obviously most things we're focused on is classical chess, and he doesn't play a lot of classical chess nowadays, or you know,
his results. Grand Chess Tour. I mean,
the Grand Chess Tour is the big one, and he's enjoying that.
I think he would have to play more with chess this year. Like he does like classical chess. He's just like he chooses the events that he likes, which sometimes can feel a bit random to us, but
yeah,
definitely he likes online chess. He does, and he does seem to excel in general in online chess.
Cool. All right. I think we're kind of done with the chess part of it all. Now we should be talking about something that just came around a couple of hours ago on Reddit. Top chess players raised their voice against the scheduling clash of the chess events in Esports World Cup and the Grand Chess Tour. This is a letter that is signed by yourself, Levon, Alireza, Anish, Kaimer, Pragnananda, and MVL. Lots of top chess players. A lot of these guys on the list, yourself included, have esports teams that you have contracts with, and it's a huge, huge clash of schedules with one of the biggest, let's say, speed chess championships events, the Esports World Cup, and of course one of the biggest over the board tours, the Grand Chess Tour. And it's a huge clash. If any one of you that have a team and have the potential to make it to the Esports World Cup, qualify to that, and then have to play the Grand Chess Tour, you will have to you would have to choose one over the other. What's the situation, and what do you think, from your perspective, the solution is?
Well, okay. I mean, to start with, it's obviously not good that there are major events being organized one over the other. In some cases, it would be like a clear choice. Let's say you're playing the World Championship and it's scheduled at the same time as like the Bucharest leg of the Grand Chess Tour. You're going to play the World Champion. I mean, there's some like that are no-brainers, right? This one is in particular difficult for people because they have an obligation to their team. Because let's say they have a contract that says they will...
It's a contract.
...represent their team. And then also they might have a contract with the Grand Chess Tour. Like I do. I accepted the Grand Chess Tour early this year. And also, besides the fact that the Grand Chess Tour announced their dates well in advance, they have had a consistent schedule for years. But besides the fact that their schedule has stayed consistent, also, they announced it last year. They announced when their events would be. And it's pretty clear, I think, to people who are interested in chess that most top players will play the Grand Chess Tour. Mm-hmm. Or want to play the Grand Chess Tour. Players like, you know, I've played every year for a decade. Players like Maxime, players like Ali Reza, like Levon. The three, Levon, Maxime, and I, we all qualified from last year's tour. Players like Prague, players like Norbeck, all these players also have esports team, or many of them do, like Maxime, yeah, like Ali Reza. I think if this was a thing that, for example, Magnus was playing the Grand Chess Tour, this probably would have never happened. But in general, unfortunately, there is the kind of view, perhaps, of the Esports World Cup and organization that that most players don't matter for the tournament, which is obviously a wrong view. And so they knowingly decided to organize the Esports World Cup at the same time as the Grand Chess Tour. So my position is that the Grand Chess Tour did nothing wrong. They announced their dates to give everyone a heads up. They invited their players well in advance. Players accepted. And then the Esports World Cup decided that they didn't care and put the players in a position where they have to choose. But to be honest, the choice was already done. It's not even have to choose, you know.
It's not really a choice, yeah. It's just a contract commitment that you just have to step over, more or less.
The players who accepted the Grand Chess Tour, you exclude them because you accept a tournament invitation. Then they announce not only, they've already announced their dates and locations, but then they also announce the players who have accepted. And then another tournament organizes their event overlapping with that. It's clearly on their shoulders to move their dates if they've made that mistake. But that they did it willingly, clearly willingly, because it's so prominent as a tour. I mean, it's been there for a decade. It's the longest running and the strongest chess tour outside of the World Championship cycle. I mean, it's nearly as egregious as just scheduling it during the World Championship match.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. Nearly. I mean, maybe even more so, because the World Championship match will only... At least they only exclude two players there. Here they exclude 10 or 9 players. I think it's 9 full tour participants.
At least 7 have signed it.
It comes to during the finals. Yeah. At least like if you could do it during like one of the rapid events. And the Esports World Cup takes place over like 2 months. So there's a lot of possible shifting. And not only that,
mm-hmm.
the Esports mm-hmm. World Cup, I think, even did this for another esport. Besides chess, they also did it for, I don't know, but there was another one that they organized their event during another major esports event. So like, I mean, honestly, what are you doing? It's just crazy to do this. So I don't think that, like the open letter, which is asking for basically an open dialogue, obviously this was already done internally and now it's just a bit more public, but clearly the Esports World Cup, if they have any interest in retaining players, they should move it. But if they have no interest in any of the players, then they should do what they want.
Yeah. Ongoing situation, obviously, it's not going to be resolved today or tomorrow. Probably this will have to be a discussion, and hopefully something will be done, because it's just not sustainable. Again, the Grand Chess Tour, longest standing tour, very prestigious. Every player at the beginning of the year, you know, wants that contract, and once they get it to be having to make the choice between these two, it's just unfair to the players. And this is it, I think, for this year. I do think we covered quite extensively everything that's happening. The Freestyle World Championship is starting in just a few days. You already talked about it, and we talked about it in the last episode. We're probably going to be talking about it in the next one after the completion of the event. Fabi, good luck in that one.
Thank you.
Nice fireplace, by the way. Very nice background. You're in Waisenhaus already, getting ready for that. I'll not take away more of your time anymore. And yeah, good luck. Enjoy the 2026 Freestyle World Chess Championship, 5 years after the last one or something like that. So hopefully this one is going to be a continuous event over the years. But yeah, good luck in that one. And I'll see you in the next episode. Cheers, guys. See you in the next one. Bye-bye.